We're taking you behind the scenes with entrepreneurs that run product-based businesses, people that were once in your shoes. Our TSBC alumni, speakers, and friends will shed light on growth strategies, resources, and inspiration to help you scale your creative business. Hey friends, I'm Katie Hunt, the founder of Trade Show Bootcamp, and welcome to Proof to Product. Today I'm chatting with Christine Miller, the creator and designer of Bundle Designs, home to cheerful, cheeky greeting cards, balloons, party supplies, and the Good Day decals. On today's episode, Christine shares her journey of turning her hobby into a business. She shares lessons she learned from exhibiting at the National Stationery Show and how being at that show opened the door to working with PaperSource. Hey, Christine, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me.
Oh, I'm really excited to talk to you because it's been a while since we've caught up.
It has. It's been so long.
Too long, really.
Yes, really. It goes so fast.
It does. It does. Well, let's back up and talk about what you were doing before you started Bundle Design.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and I'll probably actually start even a little further back than that because
sure.
It's always interesting to me to hear how things come together, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm thinking like back to even high school, I was on the yearbook staff for a few years and I did like sports editor 1 year and then I moved up to co-editor in chief, you know, in my junior and senior years, and I really loved it and I liked writing and I liked the layout design, but I never really thought that that was a career path.
Mm-hmm.
So I really loved laying out the pages and coming up with the themes. And it was really old school. It was like we had graph paper and pica rulers to sketch everything out. So,
okay, let me push pause on you there. That is how I loved doing my catalogs. I loved laying it out on paper before I ever hit the computer with it. So
did you?
I'm old school like you too.
I mean, there's just something like that, like just putting the pencil to the paper, you know, and just like sketching things out before you bring it into the computer.
Totally.
I feel like it gives you so much more freedom in the design, ironically, because the paper was like graph paper. So it was all blocks.
Right.
So anyways, so when I went to college, I was trying to figure out exactly what I wanted to do. I liked to write, but I didn't want to write as a career. And I liked creativity, but I didn't really think that that was my total path either. And so I ended up in the advertising department because I thought, well, this is a good mix between creativity and the business side of things.
Yeah. Did you work at an agency or were you in-house somewhere?
I did. Well, and I was focused on account management because that's what I thought I wanted to do randomly. And I had my business minor and I graduated and I got an internship opportunity in Atlanta. And it was at an ad agency. So I came up here and I did it for a few months and it was just, you know, not what I expected. And I think that's a combination of you're an intern, so you're not really getting the really fun, cool things to work on. But it does give you, you know, enough of, you know, a sample kind of what that
what right, that. A good preview of what's to come as you climb that ladder.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So I was like, okay, so it's not account management. And I thought, well, maybe it's brand planning. And so I interned there for a few months. And that was really cool because brand planning did a lot with the new business. Mm-hmm. And so you got to, you know, research new companies and kind of learn about their target markets and the strategy that goes into the campaigns. And it was interesting, but again, it wasn't as creative as I wanted. And I remembered when I was in college, so even though I had my advertising degree, they didn't have a lot of creative classes. Mm-hmm. They only had like one or two. But in one of them, we had somebody come in and they were either from Creative Circus or Portfolio Center. I forget which. And she had examples of packaging design. And I was like, that's it. Like, that's what I want to do. That's so cool. And it just worked out that I was already in Atlanta for the internships. Mm-hmm. And so I said, well, let me check these places out. And that's what I did. And I chose Portfolio Center. And so that was like a 2-year curriculum.
Okay. Is that a certificate program? I'm not familiar with it.
It you know, it's changed because now it's run by Miami Ad School, so it's a little bit different. But at the time, yeah, it was a certificate program. And they really focus on your portfolio and on the strategy that goes into everything. So it was a great school. I mean, I really loved it. And I felt like it prepared me really well for graphic design work. And so I got my first job out of school and it was at an ad agency and it was back in Florida. And I thought, okay, well, I'll be back closer to my family. And that was a really great experience. I loved my boss. We had a really great team. It was, you know, just the right size. We all got along really well. And I got to work on, you know, just just bigger corporate clients. I know you guys don't have Publix out there in California, but we have a grocery store called Publix.
I know, and I love them.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. And they were an amazing client. So I got to work with them a lot. And I worked on Toyota and Marriott.
Wow, some pretty big brands.
Yes, it was big brands. And I really enjoyed it. But, you know, in the ad agency, your hours are very different too. So like I would get into work at 9 o'clock and, you know, work until 5 or 6 or later if you had new business pitches. And it's just not super conducive to family life. And so within the few years that I was at the agency, I started in the Tampa office, but I was dating somebody that lived here in Atlanta. And so after the first year, we were like, well, let's see if I can transfer to the Atlanta office because they had both options. And so I transferred up to Atlanta and did that for 2 years. And in that time, we got married and then I got pregnant. And so then when I worked right up until I was having the baby, but we lived about 30 miles north of the city. And so with Atlanta traffic and, you know, the ad hours, it was just
not conducive, right?
Would have seen my kid. Yeah. And, you know, this is also one of those things where I always wanted to be a stay-at-home mom. Like my mom was a stay-at-home mom. You know, she did the room mom thing and chaperoned field trips. And I really loved that. And that's always what I wanted to be able to do. And so once I had my son, you know, my husband and I talked about it and we said, okay, well, I'm just going to stay home with them. And so that, you know, that was a big transition. I hadn't been around kids very much growing up. And so I didn't really know what to expect. You know, my son was not a good sleeper at all.
Oh, girl, neither of my kids. I'm still paying for it.
Oh, my gosh. I'm always in awe because I only have, you know, one son. And anybody that has more than one kid, I'm like, I don't know how you do it. Like,
same as you, one day at a time. So how long after your son was born did you start the business? And was it more of a hobby or did you know you wanted it to be something that you pursued as a legit business?
It was more of a hobby. It was kind of one of those things where, you know, it fulfilled that creative streak because I still had that, you know, and I still wanted to create. You know, I was really fortunate that my husband, you know, was the primary breadwinner. And so, you know, we didn't need the extra money. Like, obviously, it's great. It's super helpful to have more. And that was kind of my mentality. It was like, okay, well, you know, anything I can do is going to be helpful.
Right.
You know, but I didn't really feel the pressure of, okay, I have to do this. Like, it was definitely, you know, played the secondary role to, you know, my first job, which was taking care of our son.
Yeah. What, so at what point did that switch to be something you wanted to pursue in a more serious fashion?
You know, really probably only a few years ago. And what happened was, so I was staying home with my son and my old boss called me when my son was maybe a little less than a year old and said, hey, are you interested in any freelance? And I said, yeah, absolutely. That would be great because I can do it from home. And so I did that for a few months. And so that kind of got me back into the swing of things. And I did some more freelance just for, you know, for other people as jobs came up. And then we had a friend who was getting married and she said, hey, you know, are you interested in designing my wedding invitations?
Yeah.
And I said, yeah, sure. So I did the wedding invitations and the menu and the place cards and all of that. And that was kind of what triggered me to open an Etsy shop. Because I thought, well, if I can design these things, you know, up front, ahead of time, in my own time, and just have templates up there, you know, then if I put them on Etsy and people order, you know, it's not as time consuming to just drop in their information, change their colors.
And it's a lower risk because you're not investing a bunch of time or money in inventory at that point. You know, it's more as it comes in. Okay.
Absolutely. So that's when I opened my Etsy shop and that was back in 2011.
Okay.
And, you know, again, like I feel like it really reflected the phase of my life at that time. So it was baby announcements, baby shower invitations, kids party invitations, things like that.
Isn't it funny how our work often imitates our life and the things that we're going through, the season of life we're in?
It's so much. Absolutely. But I think that's good because it, you know, you're close to it and it gives you a different perspective and it keeps things authentic. So I really like that. But it was just, you know, what I came to learn through selling on Etsy was, for one, it was more time consuming than I thought.
Yeah.
You know, so here I have this template and I think, oh, somebody will just place an order and they'll tell me their colors. And a lot of them had like a photo option where you could drop in a picture of your kid. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I can turn this around in 20 minutes, you know, right. and just like knock them out. But inevitably you get an image and the resolution's too low. And so you have to email them back and say, you know, do you have another option? And
things always take longer, become more complex than they really need to be, don't they?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And on top of that, you know, it's like everybody's trying to get the best price that they can get.
And right. So of just, course.
Yeah. And this was also, I think around this time, Minted was starting to mm-hmm. really, yep. you know, get big. I know they started a long time before 2011, but this was kind of around when I had another friend who was a graphic designer and she designed for them. And so that's kind of when they came onto my radar. And it's just hard to compete with that, yeah. you know, to compete with a company that has that many more options. And you know, they have the framework all in place for totally. Ordering and payments.
Yeah, they have the infrastructure that makes it so much easier.
Yeah.
So, okay, you need to jog my memory here a little bit. You came to Paper Camp in 2014 and remind me, what types of products were you selling at that point? Was it still on Etsy with the wedding and the more customizable products, or had you already kind of established some off the shelf things that were ready for wholesale?
No, it was totally Etsy. And what happened was, you know, I started to realize that maybe the Etsy thing wasn't, you know, the best path for me. Mm-hmm. And I actually worked with Jen and Lisa at Farewell Papery. Yeah. They worked in the Atlanta ad agency that I was at. And
such so, a you know, small they world.
Had, I know, isn't that great? I love them. And they had branched off, you know, they were doing Farewell Papery and, you know, having success. And I thought, okay, well, maybe that's how I transition, you know, mm-hmm. instead of doing the custom work, I switched to wholesale
yeah.
where again, like all the design is done up front and it's kind of like, if you like it, great. you know, if not, okay, that's fine too.
I like how we're oversimplifying all these things of, yeah, I'll just put it up on Etsy. No big deal. Oh yeah. I'll just sell wholesale. No big deal.
Do you know, I still have that problem. Like my mentality, I'm just like, well, if I just make it like, yeah. people will just buy it. And unfortunately, it doesn't quite work that way.
True.
But they were the ones that, you know, introduced me to you and Trade yeah. Show Bootcamp. And so when I started thinking wholesale, I was like, okay, let me do Paper Camp. We had moved out to Arizona at that point. So it was a much more manageable trip,
right.
you know, to fly out to LA. And so I did that. But yeah, when I came to camp, I had just basically invitations
yeah.
and announcement samples. I didn't have any cards. I wasn't even really thinking about doing the National Stationery Show. Mm-hmm. It was kind of just like, okay, let me see what's involved.
Right.
Let me learn more about everything.
Well, it's so funny. I've talked about this a little bit on the past in the podcast, but we have like two audiences that come to Paper Camp. It's people that are trying to figure out whether wholesale is right for them. And that's a whole avenue that they want to take their business. And then the second audience are people that have, you know, already decided they want to do wholesale and now they're considering shows. So it's like that next step that they're thinking about. And I do, and now yeah. that we're talking this through, I totally remember you being there and remember your designs and you talking about like, do I want to do this? Okay, so you came to Paper Camp in 2014. I'm just recapping here for those following our timeline.
Yeah, yeah.
So you at that point decided that wholesale was something you wanted to pursue, and you exhibited at the National Stationery Show for the first time in 2015. So you waited a whole year to do it, which I think was smart because you were developing your product line and everything. You also did the show a second time in 2016. Can you kind of walk us through how did your first year differ from your second? What got easier and what got harder?
Yeah, it was the first year was definitely a great learning experience. So I went into it in 2015. You're right. You know, I had gone to Paper Camp in January of 2014, and I didn't even really decide to do cards and develop a line until maybe October of that year.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was actually something I really struggled with because I feel like when you're developing a line, you know, one of the most important things is to have a unique, you know, style, a brand that's recognizable. And I struggle with that because I don't have like a traditional fine arts mm-hmm. background. So even though I have my graphic design background, most of my classes focused on strategy, on concept, on, you know, typography or layout design, but not like the mm-hmm. pretty stuff, I guess I would say. And then my work in the ad agency, you know, kind of went along with that. I was working on other clients' brands. So most of them already had their identity mm-hmm. established. And it was, you know, designing for that identity and not necessarily, you know, doing your own thing.
Right. So creating a new identity from scratch.
And I really had a hard time with that.
with the brand portion or the product portion that was tied to this brand you were creating?
More with just the aesthetic.
Okay.
You know, like how do I make something that has a cohesive look, that's in a style that feels, you know, feels like me and goes with the tone of voice, because mm-hmm. the tone of voice of my cards, it's, you know, I say it's cheerful and cheeky, which it really is. You know, it's like mostly upbeat, but then every now and then there's a little bit of sass or a little bit of bite to a right. card. And so it's like, how do you portray that visually in a way that's, you know, engaging?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm still kind of tweaking that really when I look at some of my earlier cards and the hand lettering style. Well, some of them I didn't even do hand lettering. Some of them, you know, were right. just typefaces. And then it's kind of slowly evolved and I'm, you know, getting a more cohesive look, I guess, you know, with each release.
Well, and so I'm going to stop you there 1 second to say, creating your product line and making sure that it is cohesive, that it does represent your brand well, that it's a large enough product line that you can take to a wholesale show, that in and of itself is a big deal. That's a big project to tackle. So how has your style of designing your product changed over the years?
You know, I've still focused on the hand-drawn element to it. That has kind of evolved, you know, gradually, just handwriting and things. But I think where it really comes into play is, since that kind of became the focus of my style, I wanted to expand my product line outside of just cards, again, to, you know, have more opportunities to reach more buyers. But since I was focusing on the hand-drawn style, I thought, well, what kind of products lend themselves to that?
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of where I came up with balloons, because, you know, it's just focus on type. I made the Good Day decals that I talked about.
Yeah.
And then recently I've expanded to napkins and stir sticks and some other party supplies, because, you know, the balloons I think are great on their own, but it's always good when you can create kind of a bundle,
yep.
Like a party theme. And so I've recently expanded into that and I'm starting to grow that aspect of the product line as well.
Awesome. Yeah. It's really a good idea to expand into, to diversify your product categories, right? Because then you're going to appeal
Definitely.
To a wider audience and, you know, on the wholesale side, a lot of different stores that are going to want to carry those products.
Absolutely.
And now here you are investing in a large wholesale show that costs a lot of money. Going into your first show, what were some of your fears and concerns?
You know, obviously the biggest fear is like, no one's going to buy anything.
Right.
that was the biggest thing. But even that, you know, I was kind of able to temper that just from all the conversations at Paper Camp and being, you know, in the Trade Tribune forum on Facebook. And, you know, that thing of, you can't define your success at the show just by sales.
Right.
There's so many other things that go into it. So that first year, that was kind of my mantra. It was like, okay, I want to make sales, but if I don't make sales, at least I'm still learning this and I'm making connections and I'll know more for the next year. So
yeah.
I think I kind of eased some of my anxiety with that part of it.
I got to tell you, it makes my heart so happy to hear you say this, because we say this repeatedly at camp and I talk about it on the podcast and everywhere else I can, because it's so important to think about all the different benefits of going to these shows. It's just one stop on this bigger journey, and the contacts you're making, the connections, you never know how that's going to play out down the line and who's going to order from you, you know, years from now. So
absolutely. And that really came into effect my second year. And I'll tell you about that
yeah.
too. But so my first year going into it, that was really my mindset, was like, okay, this is a new experience. I'm going to do my best. You know, I felt like I was as armed as I could be, just with knowledge mm-hmm. from going to camp. And so I had an 8x10 inline booth, because I'm like, well, I want three walls because I want to be able to display my product, you know, in more spaces. And I was super psyched about my location in the show. I was right next to you. I was, you know, across from Claudia at Fig 2 and Sarah at Parrot Design. And I'm like, score, like I'm in a great place.
It was a fun spot.
yeah, it was really good. But my mistake that year was I had probably more than half of my product on the back
okay.
wall. So I had my logo up there, but then on either side, it was flanked with cards. And then I had kind of a table in front of it that had some of my fill in the blank invitations and things like that. And I used a lot of, you know, I guess real estate, you would call it, of my booth on the side for like a big booth number. And I had this like hand-drawn typography that said, cheerful, cheeky cards this way. And in my mind, I thought, okay, well, people will know where my booth is because
right.
my booth number is big. And, you know, they'll see the type. And if that's something that they're drawn to, then they'll come in the booth. And for me, it just did not pan out that way. I mean, it just seemed like, you know, buyers would walk by and they, you know, glance in your direction. And if something doesn't really strike them immediately, they just don't come in. You know, so I think in my mind, I thought, well, I'm near all these great people, so it's going to be busy and people are just going to come into the booth. And it really didn't happen. And so that was disappointing because I felt like half of my product, nobody even really saw just because of the placement of it.
Right. Well, for your first year, that year, did you send out mailers? What did you do on the marketing side to really draw people into your booth before you were actually there?
Oh yeah, that I totally dropped the ball on that.
I'm not trying to be critical. I'm just more curious.
Oh no, it's funny. I literally think I sent out like 12 mailers. It was so bad. I mean, I sent out nothing. And again, I think it was because I had that mindset of, oh, I'm going to be next to all these great people, and you know, our lines are somewhat similar, and so if they're over there, you know, talking to them and they see my stuff, then they'll just come in my booth.
Come
so,
on by. Yeah.
Yeah. So well, that was definitely an eye opener.
Well, and it's so important. I'm just going to go on a tangent for anyone listening that's exhibiting soon. Your booth number is your address at the show. So you want to make sure that you're telling everyone where you're going to be at all times. Add it to your social media profile, like your bio. Make sure you're sending out those mailers, include it in the footer of your emails that go out. You know, don't keep that a secret. Shout it from the rooftops where you're going to be.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's so important. And like you said, I think, you know, getting the mailers out beforehand just so that buyers see your name so that the next time they see you, there might be that, you know, sense of recognition of like, oh yeah, I remember that person, or you get on their walking list, you know, so that they make it a point to stop at your booth during the show and they know you. So those were some of my really big takeaways from the first year. So going into the second year, I switched to a corner booth. Because I thought, okay, well, there's more visibility there because you're right on the corner. I made sure to put all of my product like to the edge. You know, I had new stuff. I had balloons that I had just launched, and I had a line of removable vinyl decals called Good Day Decals.
Yeah.
And so I had put those on the other side. So my cards were still kind of like in the corner because I didn't have another option, but I wasn't too worried about it because I thought, well, it's a corner booth, and so it's pretty easy to come through and see that. And, you know, it was successful in the sense that you could see those products better, especially the ones on the edge. And I felt like I did get really good reactions from people walking by, you know, they laughed at the balloons and things like that. So I felt like I took some of my lessons from the first year and applied them in a way that, you know, was helpful for the second year. And so that year, that one was a little harder on me mentally because, like I said, the first year I thought, okay, even if I don't make any sales, it's okay. Like it happens to people and you learn. But the second year I was like, I have to make some sales.
Right.
I was like, I've learned some stuff, but I need to make some sales. So I did feel like I had more pressure on myself in that sense, and I had more products. So, you know, I felt like there was more variety. I know we talk about, you know, making sure that your line is broad enough and that you have enough selection that somebody can meet your minimum order pretty easily, you know, not having to buy 3/4 of your line to meet your minimum order. So I was excited about all of that. And then that's one of those instances where I didn't honestly get as many orders as I wanted to at the show, but the buyer from Paper Source came in my booth and she was, you know, looking at the cards and she just started pointing some out like, can you send me samples of that one and that one and that one and that one? Mm-hmm. And I was like, yeah, sure.
Did you freak out inside a little bit? Let's be honest.
Oh yeah, for sure. Totally. Yeah. I was like, this is amazing.
Nice.
And so she left, and that's something that has been really fruitful for me. So, you know, I sent her those specific samples that she requested and they ended up picking one of the cards, one of the baby cards. Mm-hmm. And that was, you know, so that was back. They probably placed the first order at the end of 2016.
Okay,
maybe.
So it took a little. That's good to share too, because it does take a while for them to sometimes process these things and place their orders.
It did. But they've still been ordering it.
That's
so
great.
That's been really amazing. And then they just recently picked up 2 more cards. So again,
congrats.
I was like, super psyched. Thank you. And so that's one of those things where, you know, I never would have made that connection had I not been to the show.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm sure I could have found out her information another way, you know, LinkedIn or asking around and things like that. But I think her maybe seeing it in person you know, gave it a little bit of an edge when they made their final selection. So,
well, and too, so it gives really you great. An opportunity to have a human connection with her rather than just sending stuff via snail mail or over email. So that's great. Yeah. Congrats on that. That's really exciting.
Thank you. Yeah, it's been really exciting.
So what advice do you have for product-based business owners that are just getting started? I mean, you've gone from it just being kind of a side hobby to actually making it into a business that you're continuing to grow and evolve. We're all in a state of growth, right? But if you had to look back at yourself when you were just starting, what would you say to yourself or others that were in your shoes?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's none of this is new. I'm sure people have heard, you know, all of this before, but I still think it's important as far as, you know, knowing why you're doing your business, because I think for me, especially, my why might not be the same as a lot of other people, you know? And so I think that's important, especially as you look at other people who have, you know, what looks like more success, knowing, okay, well, that's not necessarily what my goal was. And along those lines, I think it's important to set goals, which I do not do the best job at. So some of this is like advice for myself, really.
Hey, I get pep talks all the time on here for myself. Go on.
It's so true. Yeah. But I think if you don't write those things down, it's really easy to just get kind of lost in the shuffle and forget what you're working for. And, you know, to celebrate those small victories, because if you haven't written them down, then, you know, sometimes it's hard to remember.
Absolutely. What kind of goals are you setting for yourself now? Is it like annual goals? Is it goals around certain like sales figure? Like what kind of stuff are you setting for your own business right now?
That's a really great question. My husband asks me the same thing. it's kind of a combination of those things. So for me, I've always kind of had the mentality of slow and steady. And so if I'm, you know, making steps, like even if they're small steps, I'm moving in the right direction, then, you know, that's what I'm always striving for. And so for right now, it's consistency, you know, it's getting 2 to 3 releases out each year. It's building my mailing list. Cause like I said, I really struggled with that back in the beginning. And I think that that's kind of an ongoing process.
Yeah,
so
is.
Building the mailing list, reaching out more often. Again, you know, I talked about how I have this tendency to think like, oh, I made this thing and it's on my website and people will find it,
right,
you know,
right.
or like I'll send an email out once. And if I don't get a lot of response, I think like, oh, okay, well, they didn't like it. And that's not necessarily the case.
Right,
you know, it's just that, you know, people need to be reminded. So that's one of my goals, is to be more consistent with communication, especially to wholesalers, to retailers, because that's where I'm, you know, continuing to put a lot of my focus with growing my business. So that's some of it. I also think that there's a difference, and I forget who said this, somebody obviously much smarter than me said this, and it just stuck with me, but they said there's a difference between consuming and creating. And I'm like, God, that's so true. Because, you know, I'll sit in my office and I'll listen to podcasts, or I'll read articles, or look on Instagram, and I feel like I'm working,
right?
But it's different. You know, I mean, I guess that's a part of the work, but it's not actually creating things and getting stuff out there. And so I think it's just important to remember that.
So true.
And again, that's something that I struggle with all the time, you know, because.
Well, and to your point, there's so many distractions out there, right? I mean,
yes.
I've never been one to just sit and do, like, my husband jokes that I don't just watch television. I sit there and I do something else while we watch a show. And I'm like, well, I'm listening and I hear what's going on. I'm following. And
right.
He's like, but don't you want to just.
You're like, I can multitask.
Right. And yet he is like so enthralled in watching. And anyhow, I know we're all different, but. There is a lot to be said for actually just focusing on the one thing that you're trying to do, whether it's work or play or whatever. So cool. So what's next for you in Bundle Design? What are you working on?
I'm still getting ready for the stationery show. I'm not exhibiting this year. And I actually didn't exhibit last year. We were kind of in the middle of moving from Arizona back to Georgia. Mm-hmm. And now, you know, now we're here and I loved the show, but it just wasn't the right move for me this year. That being said, I still want to, you know, release new product, send out mailers, get it out there.
Yeah.
So that's a big undertaking. And then coming up just in 2 or 3 weeks, I'm doing a pop-up shop at West Elm for Mother's Day the day before. So I think that'll be really fun. So yeah, those are some of the big things coming up.
Awesome. Well, where can people check out your work? Where can they follow you on social media?
Yeah, Instagram is where I'm at the most. And that is just Bundle Design, @BundleDesign. I am on Facebook. It's Bundle Design Online. And then my website is just bundledesign.com.
Well, Christine, thank you so much for joining me today. It was really fun to catch up with you and hear what you've been working on. And thanks too for sharing your insight on what being a first-time exhibitor and a second-time exhibitor looked like for you.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. It's so fun to kind of relive some of that stuff, you know?
Thank you.
Hey friends, I'm hosting a free masterclass where I'll share my top three secrets for maximizing your trade show investment, as well as strategies to keep your wholesale orders coming in long after the show ends. This free workshop is for anyone selling physical products, not just stationary brands. And we're going to be talking about large-scale trade shows such as New York Now, Stationery Show, Atlanta's Mart, and many others. If you're interested in joining me for this free workshop, head on over to theboothblueprint.com to register. Proof to Product is brought to you by Trade Show Bootcamp and hosted by me, Katie Hunt. Since 2011, TSBC has worked with hundreds of product-based businesses to help them uplevel, scale, and build profitable, sustainable companies. You can find our show notes and additional resources at prooftoproduct.com. And if you like what you heard today, please head over to Apple Podcasts to leave a 5-star review and subscribe. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back next week with a new episode.